Join me, Dr. Kathy Weston, for my podcast series, Get a Grip, brought to you by Tooled Up Education, the home of evidence-based tips on parenting, family life, and education. In each podcast, I help unpick some of the trickier questions relating to how we raise children today. How do we talk to children about mental health? How can we make sure our children engage safely with the digital world? Whose responsibility is the mental health education of our children, teachers or parents? These podcasts get me talking and you thinking. I've reached out to today's thought leaders and main researchers in this area and asked them their views on the areas where we need to get a grip.
In this episode, Dr. Hope Christie meets Professor Johan Korhonen.
Johan Korhonen works as an associate professor in educational psychology at the Faculty of Education and Welfare Studies in Abo Akademi University, Finland. His research focuses mainly on mathematical learning difficulties and cognitive and affective factors related to mathematics performance. Currently, math anxiety is in the spotlight in his ongoing research project. Good morning, Johan. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. Let's get started by kind of setting the scene around maths anxiety. And in a recent paper of yours published, a meta-analysis, you and your colleagues published, you note that it's comparable to a phobic reaction. So can you expand on that for us?
Yeah, well, first, if we think about math anxiety, it's not like a white and black condition in a way that you have math anxiety or you don't, but people have like differing like levels of math anxiety. So we might all sometimes feel a bit uncomfortable when doing math, but then of course when it starts to get more severe, then we can start talking about math anxiety. And the most severe forms of math anxiety, that then we can start to compare it to, for example, phobia, so that we also, we don't just dislike math anxiety, we also show like this kind of physiological reaction, so that our heart rate goes up and we start sweating and we get a bit of a similar feelings as in fear situations. So in that sense, it can be like phobia.
Okay, great. Yeah, because I have to say, personally, when I was at school, I really hated maths, like, but not to the sense that I had that kind of started sweating and really just, I just really didn't like it whatsoever. So yeah, I'm here, it's a spectrum. So in the same meta-analysis, you actually discuss many explanations for maths anxiety, which include things like genetic predispositions and social environmental factors. It seems to be quite complex, or way more complex than I thought it was anyway, with a number of influencing factors in there. So can you talk us a little bit more around some of the factors that might be the cause of maths anxiety?
Well, if we think about individual factors, then one thing that comes up is, of course, if you have been struggling in math for a while, so that you have a bit poorer math skills. So that is, of course, a risk factor for developing math anxiety. But if that would be the only explanation, then we would have a really easy time identifying those students who have math anxiety, because then it would be the same students who are also struggling very much with math. But research has shown that this is not at all the case. So we have also students who are doing fairly well or really well in math and still experience these negative emotions. So other factors that have been shown to be related into causing math anxiety is like genetic factors, so that if your parents have also like experienced math anxiety, so there are some genes that have been identified. Myself, I'm not a like researcher on the like genes, so I'm not so into the details, but there has been like put forward figures about like 40% of math anxiety could be like explained by genes. But we also always should take these percentages as a grain of salt, but still we can acknowledge that genes seem to play some role in this. But then we have these more, how would you say, contextual factors, like the parents and the teachers, so the home environment and the school environment. And there has been a lot of research on that. If parents themselves experience math anxiety, then they can like transfer that anxiety onto their kids. And in a similar way, if teachers themselves have a negative relationship to math, then they might also affect students' math anxiety negatively. And then we also have this other end of the continuum. If we have teachers who have really high demands on students in math, and maybe themselves are probably quite good at math, and then they can have a bit hard time understanding why some students struggle and needs much more time. So that can then have an adverse effect on students. And the same with parents. If parents have too high expectations and demand a lot of their kids, then that can have a negative effect. So it's always in these like end points. If you have much math anxiety or if you demand a lot, then it can have a negative effect.
Excellent, thank you. Also, I read in one of your papers that you talked a lot about perhaps being to do with working memory as well. So could you briefly explain the role that that might have and how that might impact learning and memory in the classroom?
Yeah, maybe the most, like, if we think about why math anxiety, like, or why some students experience math anxiety, it has been quite a lot studied, the mechanism that we think that if you are feeling anxious and have anxious thoughts, that disrupts your working memory. So your cognitive capacity is reduced because you start to think about, like, what will my parents say if this goes bad, or you can't concentrate on what you should be doing. And we know that to successfully do math, you need your working memory capacity. So there are a number of studies who have actually shown that working memory can mediate the effect of math anxiety on math performance. So it's basically that math anxiety takes a part of your capacity, and then you have less left to do math.
Excellent. Okay, thank you. And when you were talking before about maybe being a bit of a phobic reaction, especially that more extreme end of math anxiety where there's a sweating and kind of kids are feeling in a really anxious state. In terms of spotting signs of a child who has math anxiety, could you tell us what teachers should be looking out for in the classroom?
Well, it can be hard to, of course, identify these students. But if you, as a teacher, see students who, of course, they also tend to express their feelings, especially younger kids are quite forward in that they might express that they don't like math that much, but it is not like just enough, because many students, at least in Finland, we have a bit of a culture that all students tend to say that they don't like math, that it's a bit of a thing. But if you notice that students don't like, that they give up when doing a math task, or really, do you notice that they always give up and they get really nervous if you ask something about in front of class. So then you might start thinking that, okay, I should maybe like try to like be a bit more sensitive here and really start seeing and observe what the student is doing, because this avoidance behavior is quite typical.
Okay, great. And is there anything that teachers could maybe do if they do start to see that avoidance behavior creep in? Like you say, I feel like it's commonplace for children to say they don't like doing math or they're not good at it, so they're not trying. But when they start to see that kind of avoidance-based reaction, or the you know, students then start to get a bit panicked when teachers ask them things. I know you mentioned sensitivity, but is there anything teachers can maybe do to be more encouraging, or is there anything they could maybe do in the classroom around maths tasks to help those feelings?
Yeah, there again, if we look at research, so many of the, like, this kind of supporting methods are quite same as when we are talking about students who have like maybe poorer math skills. So in this, that you give like this kind of scaffolding support. So I mean that we don't just give feedback, okay, this went right, this went wrong, but we try to like give support along the way when we are doing math. And then maybe also this kind of fundamental like focus, because sometimes we, as teachers, we are a bit too focused on the answer if it's like right or wrong. And also that students are very focused, because it's easy feedback, you know, did you complete the task? Did it went right or wrong? But we should be more focused on the way to the answer, because in math, it's that's really interesting, because we are all like thinking a bit differently. And this kind of making this kind of metacognitive thinking awareness more can help students. And then also this kind of mindset that if you think you are born with a math head or born without one, then why would you train? Why would you? Because I don't have a math head. I can never be good at math. And this is important that the teachers could like communicate to their students that it is all about training. But it's a bit unfair that some of us don't need to train that much and we get it right away, but others have to train a lot. So it's a bit like learning to ride a bicycle. So some have really easy time and others have to go through the ditch a couple of times before making it.
Excellent. Thank you. And I thought it was really interesting. I read it in one of your papers, I think, where it suggested that actually the more involved parents are in their child's homework, sometimes the greater the math anxiety. So could you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, it seems a bit counterproductive that if you as a parent want to get involved and then it still has a negative effect. But of course, there isn't really that many studies on this topic. Some of the studies have actually shown the thing you said, that if parents get involved and they themselves experience math anxiety, then it has a negative effect on students or the kids. But then there has also been, there's at least one study that has shown that this kind of parent engagement in math, so that you show that you are interested and want to participate, have actually reduced math anxiety. So there is a bit of a mixed findings, but my interpretation would be that this negative effect is that if you are there sitting with your kid doing math and you yourself, you get a bit anxious and frustrated and then show that frustration to your kid and maybe also accidentally say something, oh, this math is hard, or I had never like learned this or something. Mm-hmm. So you, as a parent, I think if you yourself have issues with math, you should really learn to deal with them and be aware that, okay, if I show that I don't like math that much, it will have an effect, a negative one. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a lot about that how you like yourself approach the situation as a parent.
Excellent. Okay, no, that's really helpful. The next thing I was going to ask you was around, is there anything then that parents should be maybe looking out for when they're doing homework, or also kind of trying to catch those signs of math anxiety? But yeah, it's maybe kind of similar to the teachers and also maybe themselves not showing that they themselves are feeling quite anxious about maths, or kind of making it seem also really hard if the child's struggling.
And then maybe not from an intervention perspective, but if we look at correlational studies, mm-hmm. we find really like strong relationships, of course, between motivation and performance and motivation and emotion. And there is also like this kind of, that evidence suggests that it would be important, for example, for parent and teacher to highlight why it is good to learn math. So the utility, what might the student have, like, why would I need to learn these percentages? Why on earth do I need to learn them? So that would be good, because we just assume that kids know why this is important, but it is a very high likelihood that they don't. They just do it because it's in the, you have to do it in school, but they don't reflect on why it could be good to know these things.
Yeah, no, that's a good idea, because I when I was in school, it was just you do it because you're being told to do it rather than what the impact might be later on in life. So yeah, that sounds like a great idea. And you talked a little bit, or I've seen in some of the papers that you've published, that you talk about prevalence rates of math anxiety and it being about 11 to 17%. And are there any factors? I know that we've talked a little bit about some genetic predispositions or social contextual factors, but in terms of maybe other factors like sex differences or socioeconomic differences, is there anything there that would increase the likelihood that a child would have math anxiety?
Yeah, good question. And actually about the gender differences, they are pretty universal, actually, the findings is that girls tend to, like, as a group, experience higher levels of math anxiety. And of course, that's an interesting question. Why is that?
Yeah.
But of course, there isn't one single, like, reason. But one quite plausible explanation, in my view, is that we still have this kind of gender stereotypes in societies and mm. probably in quite similar in at least all Western countries, that girls are good at reading, boys are good at math, like this kind of cliche, and also what kind of work you are like supposed to aspire for, what kind of career choices. So again, this, there's a big discussion on how to get more girls to these STEM careers. So that is basically something that quite could explain quite a lot, because the thing that we have seen now in longitudinal studies is that if we look at younger kids, like grades 1 and 2, we don't really find any gender differences yet in favor of boys. But then when we go to, at least in the Nordic countries, from grade 3 and onwards, then we start finding that girls tend to start experience more math anxiety. And it's definitely not a skill issue, because girls and boys, there are no differences. It's even so that many times, if nowadays we will find a small gender effect in favor of girls in many areas in math. So we can't say that it's because girls are poorer in math. It's something about these gender stereotypes. Because at the same time, when we ask girls and boys how good they are, so how their math self-concept looks like, boys report much higher math self-concept, even though they aren't any better, but they still think themselves as they are better. And in a certain way, that's a bit, of course, healthier, if you believe that.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, great. Thank you. And if we speak, Sandra, you've touched on it a little bit there. So if we talk a little bit about math anxiety, math performance, and educational aspirations, because I thought that was quite interesting in some of your work. And we actually also have touched on the teaching kids about the impact of, or the helpfulness of, having math skills later on in life. So could you talk a little bit about what the potential impact of math anxiety would be on learning at school and then beyond school? Does it kind of follow you after as well?
Well, there has been like surprisingly like few studies who have explicitly looked at math anxiety and aspirations and what is happening. But then there are a lot of studies that has looked at motivation in general. And of course, these go a bit hand in hand. But we have like one study. It isn't published yet, the one that we have been looked at math anxiety and aspirations. But there is like a clear trend that math anxiety, like it seems to like be, how you would say, shutting doors to these kind of STEM fields. So if you experience math anxiety in the end of compulsory education, you are less likely to aspire for, like aiming for a career in on the STEM fields and more to somewhere else. And this is like a similar things we have seen in when we have done studies where we had looked at math self-concept, math interest, and the same trend that if you, these factors are really important for where you are like aiming to go. So it's a bit like sad that if you start to experience a lot of math anxiety, then you might just make decisions and shut some doors, even though you would might have like good math skills, but you still don't go there because you don't like math.
Yeah, definitely. And is there anything then that teachers could maybe start to do to help open those doors back up? So I don't know, I'm just obviously thinking out loud, but like if they're wanting to like talk to the students about if they do want to go into STEM or they do want to do something like that, be like, well, you know, you do need math, so, you know, like let's try and kind of investigate why you're feeling that way and improve the math anxiety. Or is there anything that teachers could maybe do, yeah, to open those doors back up if students are feeling anxious? I know that we've talked about it a little bit, but in terms of helping their educational aspirations, has there been any research around that?
Not that much, but it comes back, I think, more to this kind of highlighting this kind of importance and utility values. That why would you now need to study math? What would the benefit for you, for example, in the future career? If you would study this now, then you could do these kind of things. But the problem with this motivational construct is that we, now going a bit to these intervention studies on math anxiety, because we actually have, now one paper, it's like in a revision now, but we have like looked at all math interventions we could find that has ever been done, so to reduce math anxiety. And there weren't that many. Like we tried to find, I think we found, now was it 70 or something like that? So it's very few if you think about supporting math skills, we have like thousands of studies, but there were not that many. And there we like, of course, they were very various in how they tried to reduce math anxiety, but there were like, we like identified three like main areas. So there were like these studies that tried to support somehow the emotions, so regulate your emotions, so directly affect like this anxiety levels, so to speak. And then we also have had those studies that we have called them cognitive support. So they either they tried to train some kind of strategies to solve math problems, or only training math, targeted math interventions, or then they were trying to support working memory in some way. And then the third category was then these motivational categories. Okay. And the thing we found there was we didn't find evidence that the motivational interventions would have a significant effect, only the emotional and the cognitive ones. And our interpretation is that probably the motivational like aspects, those are quite slow processes, how they develop. So usually these interventions, they are like a couple of weeks, a month or so. So probably you can't really see the results in like short term. So in that sense, I think that the most important thing, like in terms of education and teachers, that it really should be happening there already in the beginning of compulsory education. The last year, you will not change that much the students' attitudes anymore, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, that's a really good message, though, to kind of start as early as possible. Because, yeah, like you say, I think motivation is a bit of a slow build rather than kind of more like emotional regulation or cognitive techniques that probably could be implemented right away. And from my, you'll have to excuse me, from my very limited understanding of the kind of models in the literature around math anxiety and math performance. So I think I'd seen debilitating anxiety, a deficit model and a reciprocal model. How might these models kind of help influence or change the way we teach children math? Would they be able to help in that way to help improve math performance?
Well, of course, the implications for the three models are a bit like, of course, different. So just if we think about the debilitating anxiety model, that would fit quite well with this, that we think that it's mainly working memory that is hampered by feeling anxious, and then you perform more poorly. And if that would be like the only truth, so to speak, then we should really be like focusing mostly on the anxiety part. Or maybe then how could we support working memory capacity so we could structure so that the anxiety would not affect that seriously on performance. And then the deficit model, then it would be like this easy explanation that those who have poor math skills are those who will be anxious. So then it would be in the main focus to just support skills. And if we support skills, then we don't need to worry about anxiety at all, because it will sort it out for itself. And then we have the reciprocal model that like thinks that, okay, neither of these alone are enough, so we need both. And I think that this reciprocal model is more about how it actually is, because it's not only, for example, anxiety, it's not only that it hampers working memory. It's the thing that happens in the situation I'm working with math. So I might be underperforming compared to my like cognitive capacity. But then it might also be this long-term mechanism. If I'm feeling anxious, then when I see some math stuff, I just shut down and I don't even try, which means that I will train less because I avoid math. And when I train less, my skills don't develop and I feel even more anxious. I feel more worse. And then it's like this negative circle. So I would say that what it is, I think that the reciprocal model is still like, in my view, the most plausible one. And there has been some studies that have supported that one. But then there are some studies that have found support only for one of the more limited ones. But that might be, well, we need a bit more research, because even though we have like studied, I think, is it about 70 years that math anxiety has been studied?
Okay.
There are really also, there are a few intervention studies, but there are also very few longitudinal studies. That most of the thing we know are from studies that are cross-sectional. So, and of course, always if we are cross-sectional studies, then it's a bit hard to say something about this. What's the chicken and what is the egg?
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. And I think even from my own research, which is not maths related at all, but it's the same thing, cross-sectional. So it's just a snapshot of something rather than following things through time, which I think especially for changes in math anxiety would be important. So no, that's really helpful and good to know. And speaking of interventions, I think that leads me really nicely onto your project, the I Feel Math project, which you announced in September to be fully funded for the next 4 years. So congratulations for that. I think that's a brilliant achievement. And can you briefly tell us about the I Feel Math project, kind of what's involved, what are you hoping to achieve across the next 4 years?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, we were very happy to get the funding. There we have our starting point has actually been on these three models. So this debilitating anxiety, deficit and reciprocal. And then we have three parts of the project so that all three parts are testing these three models. So we will have this kind of longitudinal study there where we will follow students across from grade 4 to grade 6, and we will measure their math anxiety and working memory and math performance 5 times during that time. So that's one part. And then of course we are interested to see which of these models will be supported. Mm. And then we have the intervention part where we have different kinds of interventions. So we have planned to do one that is more targeting this kind of math skills, and then one that is targeting the anxiety, and then one that is targeting both. So okay. And then we will measure math anxiety and performance in those students and see what happens. So we hope that the results would be with the longitudinal and the intervention, that they would support each other, but you never know how it will end up. And then the third part is actually the most novel thing is that we will measure their physiological responses during math when students are doing math. So they will be doing math on computers, so doing this kind of math tasks. And then at the same time, we will measure their skin conductance level. So that's basically electric. Now I'm a bit rusty here in the English department on this kind of work. But it's basically measuring how much you sweat on your hands.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So just an easy way. So we have the students doing math, and then we measure their skin conductance, because there have been studies in the past, some quite small scale, that have found effects. So we will do this kind of things also. But that is planned next year, because we need time to really think how to do this with kids in the schools and not just in a lab. So
yeah. But that's interesting, because then you'll get to see, you'll actually get some sort of biofeedback to see if their anxiety is reducing on a kind of physiological level as well. Is that right? Because you'll get to have a baseline, and then are you going to monitor that longitudinally too?
Yeah, we have planned that we could have during 8 lessons, about half an hour per lesson, they would be have this skin conductance on, and then they do their math task on the computer. Then we get log data from the computer so that we know that how long have they stayed on a task, did it went right or wrong. So we got a lot of that kind of data. Then we have the skin conduct, the bio data. So we can link those to see that on a task level, what happens when they see the task? Do they start to get anxious? Then they start to try to solve it. Do they try for a long time, or do they just quit and go to the next one? Mm-hmm. And then these are the same students that are in the longitudinal design. So then we can actually link these small windows when they are doing math to this kind of more long-term development. So that is the idea that it might show us a bit on the mechanism between anxiety and performance.
Excellent. I know you touched on there just talking a little bit about testing effectiveness of different interventions. And because I read a little bit about the I Feel Math project and seen some of the interventions you'd be testing. And based on your knowledge and expertise, is there any practical recommendations then that teachers can implement in the classroom, kind of maybe around mindfulness or those types of intervention? Is there anything that teachers could be doing now? Obviously, I know that the findings aren't out yet. It's early days for your study, but yeah, is there anything teachers could do now?
Well, I think that at least one thing I comes to mind directly is that there have been quite promising results on this kind of expressive writing before a test situation. So it's not just limited to math anxiety, but test situations in general. But we know that if you are math anxious, then when you have to do a math test, then it's like the nightmare. So there have been like quite many studies, mostly from the US, it's Ramirez and colleagues who have done, where they have like tested that before, just 10 minutes before a test, then the students get a chance to write down their feelings, what they are feeling at the moment. And not anything else. They just write it on a piece of paper and they don't give it to anyone. They just do that and then they do the test. And this has no effect on students who don't feel mad, like anxious. Mm-hmm. For them, it's like, it doesn't matter. But it's not like doing their performance worse either. So it doesn't like matter. But if you are feeling anxious and you get a chance to express those feelings, that seems to have a quite positive effect on test performance. So I think that is a quite easy intervention and it doesn't take much time. Of course, if you have younger kids, like in the first grades, then this kind of expressive writing might be a bit hard. But if you have a bit older ones, then I see this, that this would be really easy to implement and don't require anything. Then the mindfulness, we are now like started to plan those and looking what others have done before. But at the moment, we are just like trying that we think that we just to make the students relax. So that's like the main point. Just have a like short couple of minutes thing before math class that we just like calm down. Mm-hmm. But as I said, we haven't done the study yet, so I don't know if it will work. But based on previous studies, it seems that this kind of quite easy thing to just like calm down, relax, and that should be like have a positive effect, but we'll see in a couple of years.
Back to you in a few years and see how you're getting on. Excellent. And relatedly, I think that was such a nice example with the creative writing just before a test. So relatedly, like maybe actually on test day, is there anything parents can maybe do with their kids to help, just based on your knowledge of the literature, in terms of very small immediate interventions they could maybe do to help with math anxiety?
Well, I think there is the like most important thing would be to like be aware of your own feelings. And if they are like negative, then like work with those or at least don't like actively show them and try to be interested and engaged with the students like math learning. Mm-hmm. And remember to tell why this is would be good to know these things. I think though only that I don't really think that you would need anything else as a parent really to do.
Yeah, no, that's great. That's a really great message because that's empowering, I think, for parents to know that these are the steps that they can take for their children. And we've talked actually quite a lot about practical things that parents and teachers can do with children and students with math anxiety. But are there any resources that you're aware of, like books or worksheets, websites that you would maybe recommend that teachers or parents could access to help their child with math anxiety?
I actually thought about that, but I really couldn't come up with a single one that would be explicitly like on math anxiety. But we have like from an older project we had in Norway that it ended now last year. It's like IC Numbers project. So it was more focused on younger children and math, but there we also had math anxiety and motivation. So there is on that website, and we will actually start building this I Feel Math on the same website. So this kind of just free material, free information, mostly maybe free information so that you can read about these things. So there is already some things about math and emotion there. Okay. It's like icnumbers123.com. So it's not
perfect.
That hard website. But other than nothing really like math anxiety specific, then we have like this kind of, I know of website, but they are more about this kind of supporting math skills. And then those that first come to mind are, of course, not in English. They are like in Finnish and Swedish. So they might be a bit hard to for your audience to.
Excellent. Well, I mean, maybe you could email me the links. I'll put them up just in case we do have any Finnish or Swedish listeners that would like to access it, but the IC numbers is perfect. Thank you very much. And I feel like that this is enough, but other than the I Feel Math project, which I'm sure is keeping you very busy at the moment, are there any other exciting projects that you're working on that you'd like people to know about?
Well, we have nothing like really, how you'd say, totally novel, but we have actually like similar, we have two other projects. We have one that is called Choking Under Pressure, that is also this kind of math anxiety project. It's in Sweden, so I'm collaborating with some colleagues in at the Umeå University. And there we have, the thing is, we have the same measures there as we have in this project, so that we can then compare Finnish and Swedish students. And there we will also have an intervention plan, but it's more about this kind of cognitive support that we are like trying to test there. And then we have also another project in Finland, but with Swedish-speaking population, there's a minority. So there we also have the same measures. So we are actually doing the similar things, but in a bit different context, also to see the contextual effects about math anxiety. And also, the thing that we haven't talked here about is that we are also quite interested, or I am quite interested in well-being, like in general in school. So, so we have like a lot of going on with where we are measuring like academic well-being and then more general well-being, and start to look at how are these more general well-being and general like school well-being, how is that related to math anxiety, motivation and performance? So that is something that we at the moment are like trying to look a bit more closely. But all these projects are like now in the data collection phase. So I'm quite busy with trying to get all the teachers and schools and students and parents on board to participate.
Excellent. Well, yeah, that sounds brilliant. And maybe we can have you back at some point to chat more about the well-being aspect of one of those projects, because that sounds really interesting.
Yeah.
Johan, that's all the questions that I have for you. So thank you so much for your time. It was really lovely to speak to you this morning. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you for having me. It was really nice to talk about these things.
Excellent.
This Get a Grip podcast is brought to you by Tooled Up Education, the home of evidence-based tips on parenting, family life and education. www.tooledupeducation.com. Parents and teachers in Tooled Up schools can also access notes accompanying each podcast, available to read and download from the Tooled Up site.